Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. For those who are listening to the tape, the chuckle you just heard is from our Maryland contingent. I'm sure they're going to be a pleasure throughout this spiritual weekend, guys. As I said, my name is Mike, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Carry This Message group in West Orange, New Jersey. My sobriety date, lest y'all think I don't have one, is September 27th, 1993. It's an honor and a privilege to be here in lovely East Dorset, Vermont, at the Wilson House. Kathy and I try to come up here at least a couple times a year for the past 4 or 5 years, and it's just an awesome place to be. I'm sure most of you guys felt it as soon as you walked in. The energy in here is just incredible. The spirit of our co-founder, Bill W., is alive and well, and it's right here in this room. It's a beautiful thing. Kathy and I came up here. We arrived on Wednesday, and before this, I expect to learn a lot from you guys this weekend, but before this retreat even started, I learned something new. I learned that Vermont is privy to 5 seasons instead of 4. I learned that those 5 seasons are spring, summer, fall, winter, and mud. And
Slash April.
And I think the past few days that we've been here is a good example of the mud season. But it's really beautiful. If you guys, if you get a chance during the breaks tomorrow, just not only enjoy the house, but enjoy the lovely atmosphere outside. I'll give you all a little meditation to do on Mount Aeolus, which is right in front of the Wilson House. Did I say it properly, guys?
Yeah.
Incredible. I'm blown away to be here. Before I flip this thing over to Bill, since this is a weekend retreat on steps 10 and 11, and lest you guys suffer from the delusion that that Bill and I are here to dispel any enlightened wisdom upon you, I like what our friend in the second row here said during the step meeting, that how'd that go? Advanced spiritual being. I thought I was one of those too. And what I have found out is that I am a spiritual being having a human experience, but I cannot forget that I have this human experience. I've been given the gift of this human body and a human mind and also an ego. And I don't fight any of those things anymore. I got to a point in my sobriety where I thought I could transcend my humanness. For those that are maybe in the middle of doing that, have fun until you don't have to do it anymore. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun here this weekend. Hopefully it's going to be light. The schedule is designed where we can take plenty of breaks. Quite frankly, I'm sick of leaving weekends like this or seminars or big book studies or retreats, whatever you want to call them. I'm tired of leaving things like this on a Sunday afternoon more exhausted when I came here on Friday. So hopefully that won't happen. If I have one goal this weekend, that would be it, where everyone or almost everyone leaves relaxed, more spiritual charged, and so, if we could, in our own way, just get silent, sit in a position that's comfortable for you, a position that I've found that's most comfortable for meditation is usually feet flat on the ground, palms of your hands either on your knees or somewhere on your thighs, or some people like to fold them. Back straight, usually against the back of your chair if that's possible. And I want you to just pay close attention to something. pay very close attention. Did you get it? Exactly. Breathing in. Breathing out. That's the essence of steps 10 and 11. That's the essence of spiritual living. That's the essence of prayer and meditation. And anything that Bill and I talk about for the rest of this weekend is just going to complicate that. So if you can just keep your focus and your attention and your awareness on your breathing. And something that I realized is that God is closer to me than my breathing. Another thing that I realized some time ago is that I will never breathe this same breath ever again. The breath that I just breathed in on was perhaps your breath. The oxygen and air that I release through my exhale will be perhaps your next inhale. Therefore, we are all connected. We're all one. We're all part of this thing we call God. Truth. Awareness. Spirituality. Religion. Jesus. Buddha. Krishna. Consciousness. True inner nature. That which is, always was, and always will be. A beggar had been sitting by the side of a road for over 30 years. One day a stranger walked by. "Spare some change," mumbled the beggar, mechanically holding out his old baseball cap. "I have nothing to give you," said the stranger. Then he asked, "What's that you're sitting on?" "Nothing," replied the beggar, "just an old box." "I have been sitting on it for as long as I can remember." "Ever looked inside?" asked the stranger. "No," said the beggar. "What's the point? There's nothing in there." "Have a look inside," insisted the stranger. The beggar managed to pry open the lid. With astonishment, disbelief, and elation, he saw that the box was filled with gold. "We are the strangers who have nothing to give you and who are telling you to look inside. Not inside any box, as in the parable, but somewhere even closer, inside yourself." "I had been sitting on a box of gold my entire life and didn't even know it. You are sitting on a box of gold and don't even know it. Now let's go open the box."
"Well, I'm just here to observe." "My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic."
"Hi, Bill."
"I said this once at a meditation, and I confused everybody, so I'm hopefully going to confuse you too. My truth in my spiritual truth in how I would announce myself is, they call me Bill, I'm a child of God, and my body has alcoholism. There's a, feeding off of what Mike just said, there's a really spiritual line in Bill's story that nobody ever notices as a spiritual line. And what that line says is, "I had arrived." Now, just taking that one line and removing it a little bit, the question I'd like to ask some of you is, have you arrived yet here this weekend? Are you still thinking about perhaps an accident you saw on the way here? Are you thinking about a phone call you're going to make in an hour? Are you thinking about whether your living arrangements for the next few days are going to be comfortable? What we're hoping to stress here is living in the moment. I don't know about anybody else here, but so much of my life, I seemed like life was passing me by, and you know what it was. Because the nature of my mind is living in the past or living in the future. I was rarely in the moment. I was rarely making the most of this moment, not being distracted by something in the past and not being influenced by something in the future. So in talking about stuff like that, please arrive and just listen and share and take in. It's interesting in how we rarely experience the moment. There is one situation, however, that probably all of us, assuming that all of us have experienced it, have experienced this moment or a moment, just totally fully in the moment, and that is usually during sex. We're usually so focused and so in the moment that all of a sudden a half hour goes by and it seems like about 5 minutes. And we all have certain passions that we can just all of a sudden, you know, maybe throw a baseball with our son or watch a TV show with our mother or be at work and sit down and totally focus on something we're doing, and all of a sudden the whole day just went by and we don't even know where it went. We've all experienced those moments, and that's what it's like to live in the moment. In spiritual literature, it talks about eternity. Eternity isn't some futuristic place. Eternity is the eternal now. We're already in eternity right now. Just like we're in it now, and just like we're in it now. And when we focus on this moment fully, just either listening to my voice right now or in a little while having a conversation with somebody, I'm sure a lot of you have experienced being in the moment and listening to a fifth step where all of a sudden 5 hours have gone by and I don't remember any of it. The reason why I don't remember most fifth steps is because I'm so in the moment that it's not filtering through my mind, it's just filtering through my heart. It never goes through the memory process. It doesn't go through my head. It just goes through my heart, and I'm so in the moment, and I'm so trying to help this person, and I'm so trying to find something to transform them that my mind isn't involved. And the more that we can capture moments like that, the more our life is full. The more that we feel that nothing is missing and that nothing ever was missing and nothing will ever be missing and nothing is lacking and everything is just so all right now, always. But then our mind distracts us from that because, you know, you start saying, well, you know, it can't be that easy. I mean, is it that easy? I mean, yet we've all experienced it. We all know what I'm talking about. And for me, the spiritual life is making the most of each moment. You know, the person that cries the most at funerals is the person that missed their moments with that person who is now passed on. That was how I lived my life. I judged you for what I thought, for what you lacked, for how I was superior to you, and I missed all those moments with you, you know? It's amazing today in... It's strange. A few weeks ago, I went on a meditation retreat, and it was pretty radical, and basically, for 10 days, we meditated 11 hours a day. And we didn't speak during those 10 days. And I have to be honest with you, something snapped in my head. On day 2, I wanted to leave, and on day 7, I wanted to leave. On day 2, I wanted to leave because I wasn't getting my way, and on day 7, I wanted to leave because I was getting squirrely. And in staying there and not leaving, something snapped inside of me. And there was a peace that I've only glimpsed, that really hasn't gone away. and that was about 2 weeks ago. And it's strange because Mike and I have talked a few times in the last few days, and we're like, what are we going to do this weekend? And we have absolutely no idea. And to be honest with you, I love the comfort of that because I would rather just be in the moment. I would rather just be here in front of you and say, Lord, please put the words in my mouth, put love in my heart, and help me speak the truth. And whatever comes out of my mouth is just as much news to me as it is to you. What I'm supposed to do now... Oh, by the way, Mike had mentioned something that we never found out was that Vermont has five seasons. What we also found out is that people don't like doing homework. And I'm not here to ask you if you did the homework, but I am here to ask if you didn't receive the homework, please let me know because we have extra copies of it. What this weekend for us is about is offering opportunities for growth. Whether you take advantage of it or not is completely out of our hands. What I'm supposed to do now is do a real quick review of steps 1 through 9. Now, no one has ever described me with the sentence quick and review in the same sentence. So this should be interesting.
If there is a God, may he show himself now. Now. Now.
Where I always like starting is with the circle and triangle. Because contained in the circle and triangle, which is no longer on our literature, is the three-part solution to a three-part problem. It's amazing the threes that exist in our book and in our program. It's amazing the threes that exist. About a year ago, I started writing them down, and I filled up two sides of a blue line pad, and I'm still finding threes. And containing the circle and triangle for me is the three-part solution. And to be honest with you, when somebody sat down with me and shared with me a three-part solution, it was news to me because I thought that a solution to alcoholism was don't drink and go to meetings. And what I found in the circle and triangle and what was explained to me with the circle and triangle was that not only do I have a physical, mental, and spiritual disease, but we also have a spiritual, mental, and physical solution to alcoholism. And that it's sort of like a three-legged stool, that if I'm involved, if I have all three legs on that stool, that stool is very solid and I'm not going to fall over. But as soon as one of the legs is shortened or removed, I'm in a position where I'm much, much easier going to fall over. And the circle and triangle talks about the base of the triangle, which says recovery, which is the program, which is the 12 steps. Now, the entire foundation of this entire structure is built upon that. Now, I'm not going to suggest that any one of the parts is more important, but let me just say that the entire foundation of this structure is built upon recovery/program/the 12 steps. The left side of the triangle is unity, which is the fellowship, which is interaction with other AAs and going to meetings. And the right side of the triangle is service, which is giving back without expecting anything back to us. And that includes in AA and outside of AA. Sometimes that's a little controversial because sometimes we think that, you know, if I'm doing good in AA, then it means I'm doing good. I'd like to suggest that that's the smallest part of it. Now, for those of you that don't know, the triangle is the strongest structure known to man. If you'll notice malls and buildings that have lots of space between floors, you'll always notice triangles that hold the next section because that's the strongest structure known to man. Now, in talking about the circle and triangle, I need to ask myself two things. First of all, do I agree? And do I see that in our literature as a solution to alcoholism? The second thing I need to ask myself is, am I involved in all three parts? What's also kind of interesting is that the base of the triangle has 12 steps. The left side of the triangle has 12 traditions, and the right side of the triangle has 12 concepts. Now, since AA's solution to alcoholism has three parts, I need to see in my first step that my problem has three parts, physical, mental, and spiritual. Now, physically how we're different is that when I take alcohol into my body, I sit up for craving or I want more. For some reason, I can't safely predict how much I'm going to drink once I start. A non-alcoholic can always safely predict how much they're going to drink once they start. And don't get me wrong, there are non-alcoholics that, you know, have two drinks and are ready to go home, and then a couple of friends show up, so they stay and they have one or two more drinks. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that a non-alcoholic can have one or two drinks and go home, and they're all right. And I don't know about anybody else here, but when I have one or two drinks, it sets off something in me that is very different than a non-alcoholic. Because, you see, a non-alcoholic will say things like, I don't want another drink because I'm feeling the first one. Now, I can't relate to that because I'm feeling the first one, and I love what it does for me. It gives me this in-control, exhilarating, get up and go into town, I want more kind of a feeling. And a non-alcoholic gets this out of control, beginning of a nauseating, slightly tipsy, I don't want any more kind of a feeling. Now, I'm not going to brand you an alcoholic, but which one do you more relate to? Out of your experience. Because no one can tell you whether you're an alcoholic or not. You need to self-diagnose yourself. However, we can share with you, not we, but the book and AA can share with you the experience of an alcoholic, and you need to fit yourself in that category if it applies. Now, since alcohol does something for me that I really love, because, you see, my whole life, I always felt less than even. I always felt less than comfortable. I always felt different, apart from just different. Never even, never comfortable. Just, and when I drank alcohol, it brought me to even, and it brought me to comfortable. Alcohol made me comfortable in my own skin, and I never was able to find any other way to reach me to that point. The way I lived my life and the way I thought always made me uncomfortable and always made me less than even. And then I drank alcohol, and it made me even. So alcohol was doing something for me. Mentally, I kept turning to the drink again and again, even though it caused me problems over and over and over again. I wasn't thinking about the problems that it caused me. I wasn't thinking about the ex-wives, and I wasn't thinking about the arrests and the fights and the lost jobs. All I was thinking about was, I feel less than even, and I feel uncomfortable, and I know that alcohol is going to help me with that. So I drink, saying, this time it's going to be different, and I'm only going to have a couple. Then I set off the craving where I want more. Then I overshoot the mark, and then I wonder, what happened? What happened? I went out to have two drinks. I went out to have three drinks. I went out to have a social time with my friend just so I can feel even. And then all of a sudden it was 2 days later. It was two states later. And it was ex-friends later. And I never really saw that because all I thought about was I'm less than even and alcohol is going to bring me to even. And nothing had ever done that before alcohol. And then spiritually, the big book mentions glimpses of it, but really doesn't specifically point at it until the chapter How It Works, where it talks about selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of our troubles. Now, throughout the book, it mentions the spiritual malady, the spiritual part of our disease, or rather illness or malady. But how it's described earlier in the book, before it actually points out a little bit more strongly, is it talks about being restless, irritable, and discontented. Restless means that, you know, that sense of just something's missing. Irritable is easily annoyed. Discontented is never satisfied. It talks about being a prey to misery and depression. It talks about being filled with fear. It talks about having problems in personal relationships. It talks about not being able to control our emotional natures. We're always overreacting. We can never figure out why. They're pushing our buttons, quote unquote. My favorite one is the actor that wants to run the whole show. I've never known an alcoholic that couldn't relate to that and doesn't basically snicker at it because it's like, how could they have known that? They wrote this book 60 years ago. It talks about being a tornado roaring through the lives of others. And the interesting thing about these descriptions that I'm throwing out is that this applies whether I'm drinking or not. The mental and spiritual and psychological aspects of alcoholism apply whether I'm drinking or not. And that was the key for me. That was the key for me. Yeah, I can relate to the fact that when I drank, I went too far. Yeah, I can relate to the fact that alcohol did something for me. But you know what? If I never put it in my body in the first place, I would never have to worry about that ever happening again. So therefore, that's why the steps deal with the mental and the spiritual aspects of our disease, because If our mind doesn't tell us it's okay to take the drink, if our mind doesn't say, you know what, I'm uncomfortable and I'm less than even and I need to get to even, then alcohol isn't an option. Because if I'm already even and I'm already comfortable within my own skin without drinking alcohol because of the way I'm living my life, because of the way I'm thinking and the way I'm internalizing what the people and what life is doing to me around me, then alcohol really isn't an option because I'm already comfortable without it. And for me, that's the goal of steps 2 through 12. That step 1 is where I am, step 2 is where I want to go, and steps 3 through 12 is how I get there. Now, step 2, came to believe. Now, in the big book, they provide us 2 first step questions. And I'm not going to do 1, 2, 3 to ask you to answer, but these are the 2 first step questions that I see. One of them says that I need to concede to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic. And the second one is that I need to have no reservations or any lurking notion that one day I'll be able to drink alcohol safely or without it causing me problems. So if my problem is powerlessness, what I need is the power with a capital P. And if my life is unmanageable, whether I'm drinking or not, because of my self-centeredness and because of the way I internalize life and the other people around me and what they do, that what I need is a manager with a capital M. And for me, I like reading this because for me there's sort of a traditional second step question, but for me there's also a deeper second step question that can be asked even if I've been in AA for a while, even if I've been away from a drink for a while. On page 47 in the big book, the second step question as I see it is, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? Thanks. And then it says, as soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. So it's not saying that I need to have some major transformation in step two. It's just saying, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe? But this is, for me, is the deeper second step question that we can ask ourselves currently right now, whether we've taken the second step a year ago or 10 years ago or 5 weeks ago. And for me, this is the deeper aspect of step two, because certainly after I've gone through the steps once, I believe. But for me, this is sort of the deeper essence of step two, and this is how it goes for me. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself that can take me beyond where I am now in every area of my life, past here, past the experience I've already had? Do I believe that there are realms of peace, love, freedom, happiness, understanding, existence, power, wisdom, and areas of consciousness that I cannot even imagine? Because for me, this program, this concept called God and spirituality is unlimited. There is no cap. No matter how far I go, I can still go further. And do I believe in a higher power that even though I've brought my, it's helped me and this program and other people have brought me to a really incredible level. Do I believe that this higher power and this thing called the program and spirituality, can it take me even beyond that? And for me, that's the deeper essence of step two for people who are already on the path. Then step three. Step three is kind of interesting because alcoholics don't read, they translate. Let me give you an example. Step one, I always translated or internalized that it said that I'm powerless over alcohol and when I drink, my life is unmanageable. That's not what it says. Now, step three, I always thought it said that I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. That's not what it says. It says I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. Now, there's 3 words in that line that are important. The first one being the word decision. That a decision means nothing unless it's followed up by action. In other words, you guys made a decision to get here. If you didn't take the action to get here, that decision meant nothing. That was news to me. Just like if my car is fixed, me deciding to get it fixed doesn't get it fixed until I take some action to get it down there and let some power fix it. The other 2 words I think are important are the words will and life. For me, the words will and life are lofty and too big and kind of hard to internalize and kind of hard to get my mouth around. So how I would translate The words will and life is my will is my thinking, and my life are my actions. And that brings it down to earth, and that brings it, makes it a little bit more bite-sized and makes it easier for me to deal with. Because my will and my life, it just seems too big and impossible. But my thinking and my actions seem a whole lot more realistic. I don't want to draw this on, but there's a line in, or there's a paragraph in the third step. The right page is the third step prayer, and the left page at the bottom says something that for me is the essence of the third step. It says that I have to quit playing God because it didn't work, and that hereafter in this drama of life, God's going to be the father, he's going to be the director, he's going to be the principal, and he's going to be the father. And then later on it says that he's the employer, that we have a new employer. For me, that's the essence of the third step. That's the decision that we're making, is to allow this power greater than myself to be the principal in my life, to be the director in my life, to be the father in my life, and to be the employer in my life. Not an easy thing to do. But you see, the third step is just a decision to move in that direction. That I need to do steps 4 through 9 to carry out that decision. And then after doing 4 through 9, I've now removed the blocks what prevent me from turning my will and my life over to a higher power. And then I'm free of the past. I'm not focusing so much on the future. I'm just here and now trying to do the next right thing, trying to be guided by my inner conscience. But I can't do that until I do those middle steps. So for me, the first 3 steps bring me to the point where I'm willing to turn my will and my life over to God and make a decision to move in that direction. Steps 4 through 9 is how I turn my will and my life over to a higher power. And steps 10, 11, and 12 is how I try to stay there indefinitely. And then as a result of my humanness and losing focus of remaining spiritually focused in all of my affairs at all times, that I fall short and thereby I need to go back through the steps eventually again and again. I try to go through the steps every year. I can't say that I've consciously set out, okay, it's been a year, let me do it. Sometimes I'll just go through the steps with somebody and I'll do the steps with them. Sometimes I just feel like, you know, I just need to go to the next level. And the only thing I've ever found to bring me to the next level is to go through the steps again. And I know some people that will do that and they'll just go back to the fourth step and then just kind of go 4 to 12, 4 to 12. And for me, I need to go back to the first step. And I need to when I go back to the steps to the beginning again, I need to ask myself, do I still today believe that I am an alcoholic? And that without God's help, that I am powerless over alcohol and that my life is unmanageable. And I can just see it in my life when it starts happening again. And like I said, with that deeper step 2 and recommitting myself to a deeper step 3 and then getting into a technique of 4 through 9 and during all of that living in 10, 11, and 12. The big book gets into 3 inventories as I see it, 3 4-column inventories, as well as it talks about an ideal. So I always encourage people to write out a sex/relationship ideal. What's interesting about a sex/relationship ideal is that I went through life thinking that Mrs. Right was Mrs. Right now. I went through life having no idea what I wanted in a person. If you liked me, I guess I like you. That was my ideal. And when I sat down and wrote an ideal of what I would want, 1, the attributes I would want to bring to a relationship, 2, the attributes I would want to be attracted to someone to be in a relationship with, and 3, how I would, the attributes of what a relationship, an ideal relationship would be like. And then also going back through that list and saying, okay, some of these I'm willing to compromise on, but some of these I am not willing to compromise on. Things like, I want to get into a relationship with somebody that wants to work toward a marriage and wants to have a kid or kids. I'm not willing to compromise on that. I would prefer a redhead. If they're not a redhead, I'll compromise on that. It was interesting doing an ideal. That was mind-blowing for me. That was a new concept, and that was very revealing for me. So I always include that as part of the fourth step because the book does talk about an ideal. In doing a fifth step, I usually give people about 3 or 4 weeks to do a fourth step, and I set aside an entire day to do a fifth step. I think it's important. The big book talks about that you're prepared for a long talk, and I believe that a fifth step, when it's done in its entirety, in one shot, in one day, is the most effective way to go about it. And don't get me wrong. I have sat down with people and said, okay, how many resentments do you have? 275 resentments. Okay, some of these we can clump together. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm pissed at Sue because she left me. I'm pissed at Jane because she left me. We can clump those together. But we have to look at all of it. But some of these are just common, and we can clump them together. I would never disregard or assume that I know what's best and what I should include and what I should not include in a fifth step. But if it's redundant and it's the same stuff, different person, same stuff, we can kind of just touch upon it and move on. I also believe, like it was mentioned, I guess, at the meeting before this, that 6 and 7 is also included after the hour, after the fifth step. And that, in my mind, that should all be done at night. And that's how I see it written in the big book. It talks about an hour afterwards, and it says, and it asks us some questions, and during that hour, if I can answer to my satisfaction, I then look at step 6. Am I entirely ready? If I am, I then do 7. I see that as all one day and all part of the fifth step. And don't get me wrong, 7 is an ongoing thing, but I see as the directions in the book that that's how it's supposed to be done. And it's been my experience, and some people shared, I don't want to say it was one person, but some people kind of alluded to that, you know, there were some defects I wasn't willing to ask God to help me with. I have never, after listening to a fifth step, taken the hour immediately afterwards on the same day, and immediately got into 6 and 7, had somebody say to me, listen, there's some stuff I'm willing to give up. Because right now they are faced with the hideousness of what these character defects have done in their life, and they want nothing to do with it. And in that moment, they are beyond willing to ask God to help them with all of it because they no longer want to live this way anymore. These steps are about, we have certain tools or we have certain cards in our deck, and guess what? We just found out that some of these cards don't work anymore. And we don't just shuffle them around. We just don't move the tools around. We need to get rid of these tools, and we need to replace them with tools that are going to work. And for me, that's the most effective way to do 5 through 7. Step 6 talks about, am I entirely ready to have God do it? And do I believe in a higher power that could help me with stuff like this? So he asks 2 specific questions. And then there's a 7-step prayer. 8 and 9. Something that wasn't mentioned at the meeting earlier that, not like I need to correct it, but there's something I think that's really important about 6 and 8. And 6 says very specifically that if there's some character defects I'm not willing to ask God to help me with, I pray for the willingness. It doesn't say that in the 12 and 12. That's a very key factor in regard to step 6, and it's a very key factor in regard to step 8. In the 4th step, it mentions 3 times that we're willing to set right the wrongs. So starting in the 4th step, it starts setting us up for 8 and 9. Some people don't notice that the word all is mentioned twice in step 8. Lots of people don't like hearing that. Some people will say, how can I possibly make amends to all the harms that I've done? I've been at meetings where people said, you know, just, you know, your immediate family, just make amends to your immediate family. There's no way you could find these people. What I'd like to suggest is that during the process of the steps, you are now tapped into the creator of all those people and the creator of all of life. And with the help of the creator and with the help of others who have gone through the process, there's ways to find people. And there's ways to make amends to people who are dead. And there's ways to make amends to people you'll never find. And there's ways to make amends to people that you will never talk to because you'll cause another harm by doing so. You can write a letter. You can have someone sit in as a substitute and speak to them as if that person is sitting there. It's an incredible process for someone that you cannot meet or perhaps is dead. You can get free of that guilt and remorse by making amends fully, even though they're no longer on this earth. Some of the greatest amends that I've ever participated in either listening to a letter or encouraging someone to do it and then them sharing with me the experience of what happened, were amends to people that were dead. I'm grateful for the people that suggested that and that was talking about that and had experience with that because I had never experienced it up until that point. And that's been a key with making amends in my work and with working with other people. And then I guess that brings us up to 10 and 11. There's a line in 9 that I would like to ask the group. Because I'm assuming that people that are here on a 10-11 retreat want to taste the 10-11 if they haven't already or are already tasting it and want more. Now this question, throughout the book there's statements that can be turned into questions. And this one line for me is huge in regard to step nine and huge in regard to me asking me, do I agree with this and do I think it's important? And this can be found on page 77, toward the bottom. It talks about as part of the process of the amends. And I don't necessarily encourage people to, kind of start an amend with someone as saying, I'm an alcoholic, you know, getting into the whole thing. Sometimes that's cool. Sometimes it's just kind of, an aside. You know what I mean? It's not something that needs to be done every single time. Sometimes it comes up in conversation and sometimes it doesn't. But there's this one line on the bottom of page 77 that, for me, I need to ask myself. Every time I go through this process, every time I take somebody else through the process, it says down at the bottom there, it's like the last full sentence, I think. It says, simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. Do I agree with that statement? Do I agree that I need to do my utmost to straighten out the past to get over drinking? Each time I work these steps, I need to be tied to that first step. I'm not doing this to start selling flowers at the airport. I'm not doing this to become some goody-goody saint with a little halo over my head. I'm doing this because I'm desperately trying to save my butt. I'm desperately trying to move away from the person that I was because it was an ugly scene. And if you came into my universe, you want it out. And I don't want to live that way anymore. And in many cases, by my making amends, not only am I able to work free of guilt or remorse that I have, but I'm also able to be a part of someone else being free of things that I did. And if I want to go on with love and tolerance, which talks about love and tolerance of others as our code, if I want to grow spiritually, a part of that for me is making amends for stuff I've done in the past. Not only to be free myself, but also to perhaps even help somebody else to be free. Because for me to love that person, that's part of the process. I don't like it. It's not good news to me. But in experiencing it, not thinking about it or talking about it or trying to think what it would be like doing it, but in experiencing it, these steps as well as the last three have been beyond words. It's interesting how the first nine steps deal with the past. The first nine steps, 75% of our program brings us to even, brings us to zero. And then steps through 12 are the growth and the going forward steps. Now, part of that process is using the earlier steps and again in going back through it again to have a deeper experience. And now we can bring an awakened, a much more awakened spiritual consciousness through the steps again when we go through them again. Things that were offensive to me and things that were defects to me 10 years ago, or things that weren't defects to me and things I didn't think that were that big of a deal 10 years ago, are now offensive to me because I'm more spiritually awakened and I want to have a deeper experience with this. So certain things that I thought were okay 5 years ago aren't okay for me today. And for me, that was what the process of going through the steps again was able to bring about. That's all. Thank you.
That's not all for the night. I was just sitting here thinking as Bill was talking about our primary purpose and how for such a long time I misinterpreted our preamble to read, "My primary purpose is to stay sober." I forgot about the part, and to help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. See, when I got here, when I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and somewhere around 5.5 months sober, when I was just so sick and tired of being the person who I am and feeling how I feel when I don't have a drink in me, I was ready to commit suicide at 5.5 months sober, and the 12 steps as outlined in the big book were introduced to me. And I finally became willing to take direction and guidance from someone and something other than my own mind. And I thought this deal was all about, and it was, getting the drink out of my hand. And it was. Full circle. And Bill also mentioned about the triangle and the perfection of the triangle. And it's also a spiritual law that, and that, you know, it's just no coincidence that our symbol, which is not our symbol, by the way, the circle and triangle is an ancient spiritual symbol, which has always stood for mind, body, and spirit together joined as one. That's what the circle does. But anything that's round is perfect. Anything that's circular is perfect. And anything that's round and circular is joined. And that's how I look at the 12 steps today. Bill has been saying it for years, that the way he sees his program is that it's really a one-step program with 12 parts. And one is connected to 12, and 12 always brings me back to one. You know, if you're having a problem with your first step today, go work with another drunk. Get some puke on your shoes. You won't have a problem with your first step. My first step always forces me to the 12th. And someone else's 12th step always brings me back to my first. And when we get to 9, as Bill was saying, we're finally even. And now we have just enough power to help another drunk. And my point about our primary purpose is that, see, I used to sit through weekends like this under the delusion that the reason I'm here is to become a better spiritual person for me. I'm getting better. I'm going to a spiritual retreat with some guys named Barefoot Bill and Mike.
Barefoot and Baldy.
Yeah. And I'm going to get so spiritual. And all that is spiritual arrogance and spiritual pride. I know what that's all about, guys. It was a necessary evil for me. My wife knows what it's all about. What this deal is, the reason I'm here this weekend is because our primary purpose, to help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. And quite often that other alcoholic is myself. Ten and 11 are connected to 12. They have to be. They have to be. So we're going to have an entire weekend on 10 and 11 and hopefully leave here with some tools that not only we've experimented with and utilized and did some work with over this weekend, but hopefully we're going to be able to bring those spiritual tools into our daily lives when we leave here. But it's not so we can become wonderful. It's not so we can become spiritually evolved like our friend in the second row here. I'm picking on him because he's my mirror. We'll probably talk about spiritual mirrors sometime throughout the weekend. You guys are my spiritual mirrors. If something about you ticks me off, what is it about me that I don't like about me? Tenth step axiom, that's a whole nother thing. We'll probably talk about that tomorrow. One of the first spiritual exercises for this weekend that I'd like to throw out is actually at the end of our fifth step on page 75. And since Bill did such a nice review of the first 9 steps, I'd like for each of us, including Bill and myself, sometime throughout this weekend, to take the directions from the bottom of page 75 in our big book, which are actually the directions for what to do after returning home after a fifth step, and to apply it to our first 9 steps. And if you're not at least into your ninth step amends, if there's anyone in this room tonight who's not at least on step nine, then apply this paragraph to where you are. If you're in a fourth step, apply this paragraph to where you are in your fourth step and the previous three steps. Wherever you are in your personal program recovery. So sometime during this spiritual weekend, we're going to find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done so far. We're going to thank God from the bottom of our hearts that we know God better. We're going to take this book and turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, page 59. Let's carefully read the first five proposals, or in this case, the first nine proposals, or if you're in your second step, the first two proposals, and ask if you had omitted anything with the work you've done so far. For we're building an arch through which we'll walk a free person at last. Here are some questions to ask during that hour. Is my work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have I skimped on the cement put in the foundation? Have I tried to make mortar without sand? The stones that they're talking about are the foundation stone. Foundation is foundation of complete willingness in step one, cornerstone in step two, keystone in step three. I'm almost positive, my intuition is sometimes wrong, but I'm almost positive everyone in this room is at least on a third step. I don't need to know if you're not. That's, you know. I got a feeling most people in this room are into amends. I don't think there can be much of attraction to 10 and 11 if you're not. Who cares about prayer and meditation if you haven't cleaned up your past? Who really cares about self-examination? Asking those nasty questions that we're going to go over in a minute. On a daily basis?
I didn't write it.
Steps 10 and 11, having cleaned up the past, or into your ninth step amends, no longer become torture. They become a privilege, a pleasure, a want to. I don't know if I'm going to get this right, but it's on the tip of my tongue. There's a Native American man who Bill and I respect a whole bunch. We've done some of his practices in the 12 steps. He's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Helps lots and lots of people. Actually started his own company to help alcoholics on Native American Indian reservations. He says the steps are of a journey, need to, have to, want to, like to, love to. I'm in the love to. I love to do this work. My life is still on the line, but I love to do this work. Another friend of ours says it a little differently, where the steps go from the head to the heart. They're no longer about knowledge. They become my personal experience. And we get to finally move from our head to our heart. And by the time we get to 10 and 11, We no longer have to live in our minds. And we're no longer confined to our bodies. And we're no longer controlled by our emotions. Can you imagine? Can you imagine living your daily life not, for the most part, not having to suffer from the things that it talks about on page 52 that Bill talked about? Fear absolutely controlled my life. I couldn't make a happy and successful life for myself. My emotions dominated me. And I'm not perfect. I make mistakes and I fall way short. Lots of times. That's because I suffer from something called, I don't suffer from it. I have something called the spirit, the human condition. I'm a human being, but I'm really what I am is a spiritual being having a human experience. And that human experience is not bad. Can you imagine becoming friends with your character defects? Joe H. from California says it all the time. Can you imagine resenting resentment? Why would you bother resenting resentment when it's the thing that time after time after time brings me closer to God? I am just beginning to love that part of me which will always be human. I have to. I'm stuck with it. I've long since given up trying to transcend my body. So, that's a little spiritual exercise that we can all do. And it's all about getting current. It's all about coming into the now. And from answering those questions on the page, on the bottom of page 75, if you have some stuff that comes into your consciousness that maybe you didn't write inventory on, or maybe you didn't share in a fifth step, or you have a brand new amend, we call that costing each other money. If you have a brand new amend that comes into your consciousness over this weekend, great, write it down. That doesn't mean you're stuck. That doesn't mean you have to start from the beginning again. Write it down with the with the want to, love to, desire to go clean it up, whatever it is, and let's have fun this weekend. Write it down. Get it out of the way. It's not going to prevent you from growing spiritually this weekend. Is everyone in... I need water. That's our bell, by the way. Is everyone in here familiar with the 11-step evening review? Or the evening review on page 86 of the big book? Is anyone not familiar with that? The mechanics of doing it. So everyone in this room has had an experience with answering the questions on the top of 86 where it says when we retire at night. That's not new to anyone. Okay, we don't have a nice way of closing though, but something that I would like to do is, since we're all familiar with that, we know the mechanics. We probably know the mechanics too darn well. We're probably so anal about it, we have notebooks stacked up with evening reviews. By the way, you can do an evening review written. You can do an evening review in a meditative kind of way. You can do it in your head. How dare I tell anybody that an evening review has to be written? If that works for you, write it. If you're more comfortable doing it in the meditation, in your head, maybe verbally with your spouse. I've done that. It's powerful. Kathy and I do that from time to time. It's powerful stuff. It's great stuff.
Give them the key, though. The spouse is not allowed to respond.
Right.
They just listen to your 10th, to your 11th step.
She talks, I shut up. But, there are times where I ask for permission to comment. Those are interesting times. And I ask for permission, and she has the right to say, no, I don't want you to comment. But for the most part, we do stay quiet when the other is talking, because it's always an evening review between that person and God. See, I love the relationship I have with my wife today, because it's not just a relationship with my wife. It's the triangle. I'm on the left side, Kathy's on the right side, God is our foundation. That was our commitment to each other before we even got married. Got a little flaky a few months ago, had some problems. What happened? Didn't lose the foundation, lost the awareness of our foundation, which is God. Talked about some stuff, got back on track, got some help. I almost said outside help, but I think once you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, there is no outside help, even if you go outside to get the help. Alcoholics Anonymous is a self-help program. Give me a break. It's a God help program. It's a one drunk helping another drunk program. But I digressed. Shame on me.
Welcome back.
So when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Let's do this as a meditation. We're on, Mike? Okay. Dear Heavenly Father, we ask you that we may have conscious awareness of your presence in this room. No need to invite you into this room because you're already here. You always have been, you always will be. It is us who need to have the awareness of the one who has all power. Father, please help us with our evening review. Please help us to see where we were resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. If we owe an apology, if we've kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once, if we were kind and loving to our all throughout this day, maybe there's something that we could have done better. Let us see if we were thinking of ourselves most of the time. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? Let us not drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for we know that that would diminish our usefulness to you and to others. When we're all done making our review, we'll ask you for your forgiveness, for self-forgiveness, and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. If you would, scan your day from the time you became conscious this morning. Did we do upon awakening? Did we ask God to guide and direct our thinking, divorcing it from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives? scan your day from the time you got out of your bed. Did we take time with the entity that we say is the most important thing in our lives? Did we take that time? Did we have prayer and meditation in our own way, which is comfortable to us? Did we spend time with God? If we went to work today, were we resentful? Were we selfish? Were we dishonest? Were we afraid? Did we do something to someone on the job today that needs to be cleaned up? Do we owe an apology? If so, we can write that down. Concerning our job and our career, have we kept anything to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all with our work today? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Concerning our job, what we need to get done? Or were we thinking of how we could help our employer? Or employee? Or co-workers? What's our primary purpose on our jobs? Concerning our home life, if we have a spouse, children, pets, how were our thoughts, words, and actions in our homes today with our immediate families? Were we resentful? Selfish? Dishonest? Or afraid? Do we owe an apology to our immediate family, spouse, children, pets? Is there something that we're keeping to ourselves concerning our families that needs to be discussed with someone? Were we kind and loving toward all? To all those beings in that household, were we kind and loving? Kind in thoughts, loving in actions? What could we have done better? Were we selfishly thinking of ourselves most of the time? Concerning our spouse? Children, pets, household duties? privilege. Did we wash the dishes today for our spouse just because we love them? And maybe it'll make their load a little lighter. Were we thinking of what we could do with others in that household? And what we could pack into the stream of life? How about in our trips to the Wilson house today? In the car? With strangers? Did we do the best we could in thought, word, and deed? Or is there something we could have done better? Could we have let a person go in front of us on the highway? If we were cut off, have we really ceased fighting everyone or anything? If tempted to give the finger, did we recoil as from a hot flame? Did we judge anyone today? How did I do today with one of the most powerful words in the English language? Love. How did I think love? How did I speak love? How did I show love? Did I? Could I do better? Is there an area of my life that I may be struggling with today that I haven't asked God to help me with? Am I willing? But let's be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that's going to diminish our usefulness to God, to others, and that'll diminish our usefulness on this weekend. So if we made some mistakes, we've made some mistakes. We're human beings. We're fallible. We will make mistakes. But what can we do about it? God, higher power, Father, creator of the universe, my true inner nature, I ask for your forgiveness of the areas that I fell short in today. I ask for what corrective measures need to be taken, and I ask for the power to carry that out. Let thy will, not my will, be done always. So be it. No?
What? Before we close down, I guess you can shut the tape off.
I want to just give a warning about any of the things that we've discussed this evening And some of the things throughout this weekend that may not particularly per se be in our Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book or 12 and 12, but the essence is, anything we'll be talking about, the essence is from AA. I was talking to a couple of my new friends on the porch earlier, and it's always been important for me to know and to pass on to others that concerning the 10th and the 11th step, you can get as crazy and as kooky and as mountaintop as you want to get. Go ahead, do that. Go where your spirit, your heart guides you. Do what you feel, have fun with this. Do what you feel you want to do. But a man from Texas gave me some important advice. He said, Mike, I have everything that I do in the 11th step, I do along with the rest of the steps, never instead of. Your spiritual practice, always do along with Alcoholics Anonymous, never instead of. It's okay for our head to go in the clouds sometimes, but we need to always keep our feet firmly planted on the ground. I have one more meditation or exercise to throw out. It struck me when Kathy and I were coming up on Wednesday. I have called it the Mount Aeolus meditation. Sometime throughout this weekend, and someone made a joke, it'd be funny to see a bunch of drunks over on Mad Tom Road all staring at this mountain. But that's the essence of the meditation. When you get a chance, go on the side of the house here on Mad Tom Road. Get a nice clear view of Mount Aeolus,
which is straight that way.
Straight that way, right in front of the Wilson House. And meditate on this statement, which comes right from our big book. While looking at Mount Aeolus, meditate on, who are you to say there is no God? Thanks for letting us share. We'll see you 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.